Hello and welcome to Metcast, the official podcast of Manchester Metropolitan University. There are 3.5 million people in the UK facing fertility issues, whether that be infertility, going through fertility treatments, or experiencing miscarriage. But awareness days such as the recent Fertility Awareness Week show us that more still needs to be done to change conversations around fertility to ensure everyone who needs support receives it. At Manchester Metropolitan University, researchers in the Centre for Decent Work and Productivity are looking into the experiences of those going through complex fertility journeys in the workplace in order to find out more and fill a gap in knowledge around fertility and help organisations better support employees going through these challenging journeys. In this episode of Metcast, I speak to Dr. Crystal Wilkinson, a senior lecturer in human resource management and part of the research team. Welcome, Crystal. Thank you for joining me on Metcast. So I think before we get into a discussion about your research and what you found, it'd be really good to know what we mean by complex fertility journeys. What type of things are we referring to here?
Yeah, this project, we allowed people to sort of self-define what they thought complex fertility journeys were. Most of people included fertility tests, fertility treatment, miscarriage, and for a good number, involuntary childlessness. So we weren't being too prescriptive on what complex fertility journey meant to somebody. For some, it included secondary infertility. So they'd had one child, but then they'd come across infertility, fertility issues, trying for a second baby.
And what impact can these problems have on a person or a couple that are going through this?
So actually managing your diary to attend appointments frequently, to manage medication schedules, to liaise with clinics, liaise with doctors trying to get diagnoses for different things. Physical, medical procedures, people are taking medications that might invoke a mini menopause, things that might make them forgetful, that might make them bloated, that might make them in pain. Emotional, huge emotional aspects to all of this. People have talked about living 3 or 4 years in cycles, monthly cycles, because it's linked often to the menstrual cycle, you know, hope and then grief and then hope and then grief. A huge thing around disenfranchised grief of involuntary childlessness, which is kind of grieving something that's not really recognised to be a thing. You know, they talk about like pronatalist cultures where it's just assumed that people can have children. And so you're grieving what you wanted to have, but there's not necessarily a discourse or a narrative to tap into. You're grieving something that didn't happen. There's social challenges, or, you know, relationship issues, friendship issues, where you're on a complex fertility journey and a close friend or colleague is pregnant, for example. And financial. So there's considerable financial challenges for people going through fertility treatment. I think the vast majority of fertility treatment is actually private funded.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important here to say as well that, you know, these things can have an impact on a really diverse range of people. You know, it can be men, women, mixed or same-sex couples, the LGBT community, individuals who are going through it alone. So, you know, it could be any of us, couldn't it?
That's another thing, is 1 in 6 couples experience infertility. Fertility treatment's often the safe route for same-sex couples who want to be parents, for women who haven't got a partner but who are concerned that over time that they might not meet somebody in time and so on.
So your work looks specifically at dealing with these fertility journeys in the workplace. What do we know about what is going on in workplaces at the moment and how they're dealing with these situations?
There are some great campaigning organisations, so Fertility Network UK. They have packages for working with employers. There's an organisation called MIST, which is Miscarriage, Infertility and Childlessness Support at Work, I think, and a few others that are kind of doing bespoke guidance for organisations. But unless an organisation really is aware of this issue and reaches out, there's probably not that much going on. We spoke to 80 men and women on complex fertility journeys, 10 line managers, and there was very, very little in there in terms of there was a policy on this. Quite often there were other policies around absence management, around selection and promotion, you know, just other things where either the elements of the policy were problematic or systems that were in connection with the policies were problematic. So, for example, a absence logging system where somebody had a miscarriage and they wanted to report that they needed a few days off. And there's a drop-down box in the absence reporting system that said, you know, is this absence pregnancy related? So they ticked yes because it was a miscarriage, and an automatic email was generated saying congratulations on your pregnancy. So it's kind of, I think what it is that most organisations just haven't really thought about it. It isn't an issue that's discussed that much, and it's kind of a self-reinforcing cycle, if you like, is that there aren't policies, so people don't feel they can talk about it because they don't really know how it fits in or whether it should be talked about. So then the organisation doesn't know that this is a thing, so it's a self-perpetuating cycle.
So as you've just mentioned that you interviewed 80 different people going through these journeys, what impact did they say going through this had on them at work and in their career?
And all of these different issues have very different implications in terms of trying to manage your work alongside. Importantly, there's just no research on this, really. Very little research on the intersection of any of these issues and work. We're getting more on miscarriage. We're getting more on the menopause, which is great, but still very little on fertility treatment, involuntary childlessness, and those issues. And they're very, very prevalent. One in four pregnancies ends in miscarriage. One in five women are childless, and 90% of those, it's not by choice. So it's, you know, it's a lot of people that these issues affect, and it's working age population issues as well. Obviously, there's stuff around actually attending appointments at fertility clinics and things, and you know, how do we manage that alongside the commitments of your job? So some people have to arrange cover for things, which means that you might have to tell people. And do you tell them the truth, or do you kind of make up a reason why? There's for some people who do have flexibility in the job, you might think that's great, you know, they can manage this, but quite often what would happen with those is that they'd be making up for the time that they lost in the evenings or at weekends, so they weren't really getting the break from work that they needed. It was kind of just extending their working days and working weeks. Career concerns. So people thinking that if I disclose this, then my managers know I'm trying for a baby, they know I might not be here. So there's a lot in the literature around maternity and work where people are reluctant to disclose because they think people will make assumptions about their career ambitions or their availability or their commitment. But they're often quite confident that they've will be a baby at the end of that, and it's going to become apparent at some point. Whereas if you're disclosing fertility treatment, you're basically disclosing the same sort of intention to be off and to be a parent, but there's no guarantee it's going to be successful. So you might have a negative career consequence and a negative fertility outcome, and so that can be quite problematic. People staying in jobs they don't really like or having to work extra to afford fertility treatment. People being worried about negative reactions, discrimination. So some of the same-sex women and solo mothers were worried about kind of the extra things that revealed about them and that they might get judgment about those identities. So loads and loads of issues.
And you also spoke to line managers as well about their experience and their knowledge of this area. What did they say?
In terms of line managers, there's a double perspective, really. So we spoke to 10 line managers, but we also spoke to 80 people about their fertility journeys and how their managers reacted. So we had quite a lot of information, really, to go on in terms of the line manager's position. And I think the main things that came out of it, really, is the managers that handled it the best, in a way, were the ones that were willing to help. They admitted when they didn't know how to handle something and when they would need more information, and they went and proactively tried to get that information. The ones who kind of almost, it sounds counterintuitive this, but the ones that didn't see it as that big of a deal, they were sort of like, this is no different than any other employee who would need support at a particular time. So it's no different than managing maternity. It's no different than managing somebody who's got a mental health condition that flares up occasionally, or who's going through cancer, or is going through divorce, or you know, just that their productivity might drop for a while, they might need more flexibility, they might need more support. But you know, it happens to us all, and I think that is amazing because it normalizes it. But the other side of that is less experienced managers were worried about getting it wrong. A lot of managers, experienced or not, were worried about the consequences of offering support. So if I take off some workload, how do I get that workload covered? You know, so some of the managers were taking on stuff themselves, worried about how do I get other members of the team to step up a bit if I don't necessarily can't tell them why, because it's a confidential disclosure. Difficulties managing other members of the team when there was, for example, a pregnancy in the team and somebody who's going through fertility treatment and you want to support them both. And again, there was the issue around policy is a really interesting one, that having a policy around fertility treatment, around miscarriage, is good because it makes it a legitimate thing to talk about. But policies can be problematic when they're really prescriptive. So if you have a policy that says you're allowed 5 days of IVF leave per year or per cycle or whatever it is, that can then constrain managers. They'd like to offer X, Y, and Z, but there's a policy that says that. So it's very, very difficult in that, you know, we want these to be much more communication about this, but you do really need more flexible policies, support for managers to give individualised support, because everybody's needs are very, very different. So, and giving the managers the autonomy to grant the kind of flexibility that they might want, the resources to do that.
So what do you think that we could be doing in the workplace? What can we do differently to make this better?
Absolutely, I think awareness raising. So things like Fertility Awareness Week, Miscarriage Baby Loss Awareness Events, World Childlessness Week. You know, these are kind of campaigns that pop up at certain times during the year. And if you do an awareness raising thing about that in the workplace, it just, you know, provides an opportunity for people to see that, maybe this is something that it is okay for me to talk about at work, or for managers to think, oh, that's a thing. Oh, right, okay, maybe I'll find out more. I think just putting resources on like a company website can be useful. So resources for an employee, or just some guidance of, here's a link to Fertility Network UK, here's a link to Tommy's Baby Loss Charity, or, you know, some of those things, World Childlessness Week. Then there is your network groups. So we here have a gender forum, we've got a parents and carers forums, disabilities forum, LGBTQ forums. You know, there might be spaces within those to start a thread, or to have some sort of buddy scheme almost, where, you know, people say, oh yes, I'm going through that as well, and we can have a chat. Obviously policy, so, you know, you could have an IVF policy, and that would make things, you know, more explicit. And then the main things is training, you know, training for mental health first aiders, if you've got them, that some people could be going through this, and there are emotional and psychological aspects to those journeys. And absolutely line managers, because they are the crucial linchpin in whether people's pathway experiences are more positive or more negative.
And what is the benefit to businesses taking this advice on board and making these changes in these areas?
I think there's a massive, massive business case. But obviously there's a moral case that we want to be supporting people, but there's a huge business case as well. And I haven't got the stats on this because it's just a very, very under-researched area, but recruitment. So if you can show that you're an employer that is positive to these sorts of things, then people quite early on in their fertility journeys, which is quite early on in their working lives, their careers, might think, oh, that's the sort of place that I want to be. They will be supportive. Obviously, absence management. You know, if people can be more honest as to why they're needing time off and not automatically taking time off because they don't see there's other ways they could be supported. For example, flexible. If they were given some flexibility in their job, they might not take weeks off, or, you know, so there could be absence. Retention, absolutely, people not leaving the job. Engagement, you know, psychological contract, people feeling my employer cares for me, therefore I'm going to work hard and I'm going to reciprocate and I'm going to tell other people that this is a great employer. You know, I think there's potentially quite a lot of strong arguments there.
And just finally then, do you think that there's stuff that could be done nationwide as well? You know, something that our government could be doing to help?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see legislative protection. So one of the things that we did discuss with participants quite a lot here was about the current legislative framework in the UK. And obviously the Equalities Act is the main thing. And a lot of people were saying a disability is a protected characteristic. And if you've got a disability, there's employers got an obligation to discuss reasonable adjustments. And a lot of people are saying the turmoil, the physical, mental, psychological turmoil I am going through, and I have been going through for years, would fit the criteria of a disability probably, but I'm not quite sure whether it does. So, and obviously there's a right to request flexible working, which is available to anybody, but it is very much a right to request, not a right to get. Yeah, I'm sure there is lots that could be done at a legislative level.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Metcast, the official podcast of Manchester Metropolitan University. Your feedback is always welcome, as are much needed reviews and ratings on iTunes. So if you have a moment, please head there and let us know what you think. You can also subscribe to our podcast on your preferred podcast platform. That's all for this time though. See you next time.